Good morning. Good to be with you this morning. Good to get out of the heat for a few minutes into air-conditioned land. Now, I show you this picture for this reason. This is Rayanne on the left, Sydney on the right, and if you do not recognize the handsome man behind the wheel, that is where I spent most of my time for about 10 years of youth ministry, driving the bus all over the country. That is a 34-passenger Chevy bus that I had the CDL for, and we would drive from place to place doing things that teenagers do. Sometimes it was mission trips. Sometimes it was going to visit a Christian college. Sometimes it was a back-to-school thing where we went and shot each other at laser tag and rode go-karts. It was always something different. On a Thursday morning, we got up at, I probably got up at about 5 at my house. We got to the church building at around 6 o'clock, packed up the trailer on this bus, and loaded everybody on board, said a prayer. Might have circled up in the parking lot and said the prayer first. And then we started off for St. Joseph, Michigan. It was the summer of, I guess it's a little more than, that picture is not this trip, but the year we took the trip, it was the summer of 2007. It was a day where there was an excessive heat warning. It was about 98 degrees outside. We were rolling along down the road in this bus. I split time on that trip with Daniel Adams driving this bus. Daniel, you might remember last year, came and drew for us while I preached one Sunday. Daniel and I would drive this bus along down the road. We had about a two-day trip ahead of us to get to St. Joseph, Michigan. We were hoping to make it to Northern Illinois that night, stay the night in a hotel, get up the next morning and make it to St. Joseph, where, ironically enough, we were going to put on a VBS for a small church there that just did not have the manpower to do it. About 6 hours into our journey, Daniel is driving, so I blame him for all of this. Daniel is driving down the road. I am on the first row, kind of catty-cornered to him. We're talking about something, and Daniel says, uh-oh, and I said, what's going on? And as I look over toward Daniel, I notice on the dashboard, every light that is there is lit, literally, every one of them. Daniel said, I just lost all power. And I was like, what do you mean? Just all power, the bus is not on right now. And I said, oh, okay. We're going 65 miles an hour down Interstate, I believe 57 in Southern Illinois, and coasting basically at 65 with no real control. Buses now have power steering. When you have no power, you have no power steering. And so Daniel, right around this time, says, you know, I think I just saw an exit sign. And so sure enough, we look up ahead and there's an exit. And Daniel puts his foot on the left side of the bus just for the strength of it and begins to pull as hard as he can to the right on this 34-passenger bus to get it to gradually move over onto the exit lane where he coasts. And again, by the way, power brakes, going to be an issue in just a minute. He coasts to the end of this exit. Luckily, there is nothing there. There's a stop sign at the end of the exit, and Daniel said, I know it's there, but there's nothing we can do about that. And he coasts across the intersection where, fortunately, there are no cars coming either direction, and he coasts into a big paved pad, which looks like it may have at some point in time been a truck stop, but all that is left is the pavement. And he's, you know, holding onto the brakes, pulling the wheel, and finally we come to a stop right at the edge of this pad. Breathe a sigh of relief. The kids have no idea anything is going on. They're all just being teenagers back there. We stop. Everybody thinks it's a bathroom break, but there's nothing there. And we try to figure out, what are we going to do? And so Daniel, who is an artist, and me, who I'm a minister, get out to look at the engine of a 34-passenger bus. And so we pop the hood open, and we look at it, and we look around, and yeah, there it is, and try to figure out, you know, what exactly is going on. And then we see the first hint from under the engine of the bus coming out the front. There is a piece of rubber. And so Daniel picks up this piece of rubber and starts to pull on it. And sure enough, here this piece of rubber, which is kind of hot as Daniel grabs it and he drops it again, and then we pull it out, is a 12-foot long black piece of rubber that is the serpentine belt for the 2005 Chevy bus that we are driving down the road. That controls power for everything. Now, you can't just run down to AutoZone or Connects or any of those places and buy a 12-foot long serpentine belt, even if there's a town there. But as we look around, There's nothing. I can't see a town from where we are. This, by the way, would be the trip later in the week where we bought our first GPS device. So I still really don't know for sure where we're at. And Daniel kind of remembers the name of the town, and we open up our atlas. We always had an atlas there in the bus. And sure enough, we found that we were right on the outskirts of Kinmundy, Illinois. Population 900. Now, Kinmundy was, I believe, 2 miles down the road, maybe three. We can't see it, but we know it's there based on the atlas. I have a flip phone. This is pre-smartphone days. That was almost bad. This is pre-smartphone days. I have my flip phone. I start making calls, transportation deacon, everybody I can think of, trying to figure out what do we do? How do we get out of this mess? Where do we go? I get numbers from mechanics provided by our bus people, none of which are panning out. I, during the next 24 hours, I would look later and see, made over 75 or received 75 calls on my phone. And this is in the time when people didn't do that, by the way. I'm desperate for help. I have 27 teenagers that I've now sent to be under a shade tree on a 98-degree July day, because the other flaw of this bus is the windows don't open. It has air conditioning for that, but when you have no power, good luck with that. So they're all sitting under a shade tree wondering what's going to happen next. And this Nissan Altima pulls up. And in the Nissan Altima is a guy who goes by the name of Threer. Now, what I'm guessing, based on his build and his age, is this is a guy who played high school basketball and never quite outlived it, and he was the three-point guy on the team, and so they called him Threer. And he handed me a business card, and it was his name and the Threer, in quotations, whatever his last name was. And he said, "Do you guys need help?" And I said, "I'm trying. I'm working on it. I'm calling people, and I appreciate it, but I think we," and at that point, I thought we might have it under control. About a half hour later, Threer comes back by in his Nissan Altima, and he pulls in and he says, "Sure you guys don't need some help?" And I said, "Yeah, I think we need some help." And I found out that Threer attended the Kinmundy Christian Church, 3 miles down the road there in Kinmundy, Illinois, population 900. And he said, "I attend the Christian church down there, but we don't have a vehicle because we're kind of small, but I know the Methodist church does. Let me call them and see what I can do." And so in the next 30 minutes, what we have unfolding is the Christian church calling the Methodist church to transport the Church of Christ kids. And I remember sitting there thinking, no one's ever going to believe this. And so sure enough, here comes the Methodist church van being driven by the Christian church guy. And he loads up 14 of our kids on the 15-passenger van before we knew we couldn't use the back row. And he went off to the Christian church, and I thought to myself, first of all, I just released 14 of my teens to, I have no idea who this guy is. And I'm going to have to answer their parents for this. Around then, the sheriff of Kinmundy shows up, and he starts transporting folks in the police car, which feels a little more secure. Somewhere, some teenager has a picture of me in the back of the sheriff car at Kinmundy, Illinois. We finally all get our way to the church building there in Kinmundy. They put us up in the basement there of their church building. They took us to the grocery store, which was part of a convenience store because it was a teeny tiny town. We bought a bunch of frozen Totino's pizzas, and we fed our crew dinner that night. And my wife several times throughout the day had to tell me, "You need to calm down and look like you're in control. Because they keep looking at you, and when you freak out, they freak out. So you gotta," and so I put a front on, everything's cool, we're good. I have no idea what's going on. The next morning, I slept on a row of these chairs, 2007, so think of my kids, David, six, Nathan, about to turn five. We were in the nursery of the church, sleeping on chairs like this, blocking the doors so Nathan wouldn't escape. And it was a weird, weird night. Not a lot of sleep happening that night. What I had to set up before we went to sleep was, what are we going to do now? The people in Michigan are expecting a VBS. I know, by the way, this is a long story, and I promise you it's going somewhere. The people in Michigan are expecting a VBS. We've not met them yet. We knew them through someone else. All they know is these crazy people are stuck in Illinois. In Searcy, on that side, there are still two church vans sitting in a parking lot that I should have taken, apparently. And I have found four people who are willing to get up at 4 in the morning and get in those two church vans and a car to bring them back to Searcy later and drive 6 hours to us so we can have transportation. When I wake up the next morning, the folks at the Kinmoney Christian Church, who we had never met before this day, are in the fellowship area cooking us a full breakfast. Pancakes, bacon, eggs, the whole works. No idea what their church budget was. Clearly, they had not been planning for this day. Great breakfast. We got done with breakfast, and the preacher says to me, "We've lined up 4 houses that we can take everybody to so they can shower." I hadn't even thought of that. So we all go off to these different houses to shower, to get cleaned up for the day. About 10 in the morning, here come the 2 church vans pulling into the parking lot from Searcy, Arkansas. People gave everybody hugs. We prayed with them. They got back in the car and drove 6 hours the other way. We got in these 2 church vans. We drove the rest of the way to Michigan, where we had a feast when we got there. Nothing according to plan to that point on the trip. And believe me, the youth minister has a plan. Nothing according to plan. I was beside myself, not knowing what to do, not knowing if VBS would still happen, trying to figure out how to get a bus fix. I left the bus keys in the hand of Threer, who would take it to another town 15 miles down the road where they would fix it. Transportation deacon called and said, "Where's the bus?" I said, "Threer's got it." He's like, "Who's Threer?" "He's the guy. Just don't worry about it." We go, we tell the story in Michigan. They're blown away by the whole thing. Great VBS, good week. What I didn't mention to you is we left early Thursday morning after on Wednesday night having a guest speaker come and speak to us at church about the Good Samaritan. And the angle that he came at the Good Samaritan with us was sometimes you find yourself being that guy beaten up on the side of the road. And I thought to myself so many times in that 24 hours trying to figure out what in the world was going to happen next. Timely. Because we are stuck. We are at the mercy of everybody around us. And everything about that trip went off fine. And if you ask any teenager who was on that trip what they remember about Michigan VBS that year, it was the basement of the Kinmoney Christian Church. Not a part of the plan, not anything we ever thought was going to happen, not the intent of the week. And yet we found God there, clearly, all around us. And we found out about what it is to be a neighbor in Christ. We found something we never expected. We came back through on the way back, and what we found out when we got there, I called Threer, and he said, "The guy is working on your bus right now." It had been a week at that point. They had ordered the wrong belt 3 times while we were gone, while we were in Michigan, and the guy who is a friend of Threer's that was a mechanic, stayed up until 2 in the morning to make sure our bus was ready. And as we passed back through Kinmundy, the bus had been completed 20 minutes earlier. Picked up the bus, drove all 3 of our vehicles back home, and everything was good. You can imagine yourself in lots of places in the story. You could be the parent back home worried about your kid and how they were going to get where they were going and who these strangers are that are keeping them. You could be the transportation guy worrying about your bus. You could be me worried about the whole thing. You could be the people in Michigan wondering if they could pull a VBS off while their people are hours away still. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" Jesus begins by turning the question back. "How do you see this? If you had asked me before this whole experience what I think about Kinmundy, Illinois, I would need Google. I have no idea. I don't know where that is, what it is, what the population is. That a place? I don't know. I will never forget that town, and neither will anyone on that trip. They will always remember what it was like to be there." He turns this initially on the guy and says, "What do you know? Tell me about what you know." And the guy answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, with all your strength, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." Do this. It's one thing to know. It is another thing to do. I don't know how quickly I would have released control to these folks in Kinmundy if I had not just heard the day before a lesson about being that guy on the side of the road. Because I don't like to release control. Not over my teens that I'm responsible for. not over my own family, my 5-year-old and my 6-year-old that I'm responsible for, not over my wife, not over this bus, not over all of these things. I don't want to let go. I don't want to be that part of the story. And on the flip side, for Threer, I don't know what was going on in his day as he drove by, but his day suddenly became taken over by us. His week became taken over by us, strangers, neighbors. But he wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Who are we talking about here? I want a very clear view of, if I have to help people, who are those people? Give me a list. I can check it off as I do it. I want to know who you expect me to help. And wouldn't it be easier that way sometimes? Wouldn't it be easier when you see that, you know, to 3 years' advantage, when you see teenagers under a tree and a bus with West Side Church of Christ really big on the side, you probably are pretty sure you're not going to get robbed. You're probably pretty sure this is not like a serial something. For us, we don't always have that advantage. We see somebody, we make assumptions about who they are, where they're coming from. He wants to know who his neighbor is. Who are we talking about here? And so in reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead." And the guy's got to be thinking, hang on a second, I said, who is my neighbor? I'm not looking for a story about travel from Jerusalem to Jericho. Who is my neighbor? Now, they're traveling down from Jerusalem to Jericho. And visually, to get this is a journey that's going to take a little bit of time. There is a literally traveling down because they're going down in elevation as they go, because Jerusalem is above Jericho elevation-wise. And the people we see run across are, first of all, a priest. A priest happened to be going down the same road. When he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. And then a Levite, when he came by and saw him, passed by on the other side. Now, priests and Levites, isn't that the same thing? The priests come from the tribe of Levi. Generally, the way they would make this distinction here is the priests are the guys offering the sacrifices, and the Levites are the folks that are making the other things run in the temple, basically. There are a lot of other jobs to be done that are not the direct sacrifice, and so you've got these two levels of temple workers. Now, if they were going up to Jerusalem, and remember, they're going down, not up, and our assumption here is that they're both traveling the same direction for this reason. Generally, the priests or the Levites, if they're going up to Jerusalem, they didn't travel alone. They traveled in groups, or at least in pairs. As they're going down from Jerusalem, they are most likely leaving a time where sacrifice has been offered. Now, if they're going up, they have an excuse. They have to be ritually clean for the sacrifices. And so they could walk away from this saying, just do my duty. This is what I've got to do. But coming back, there's not an excuse to pass by. There's not a reason they could give that would really excuse them just not even noticing that this guy is there and not wanting to do anything about it. They're going down this same road, and isn't that kind of how life works? We're all going down the same road together. Sometimes we're hard on our luck, sometimes everything's going well, and whichever side of that equation you find yourself on, there is something for you here in this story. And unfortunately, I think sometimes we also find ourselves in that priest or that Levite. We just don't want to get involved, don't want to get messy, got something else planned for that day, it's too complicated. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. Now, this is the Greek word, and if you want to try to pronounce that, knock yourself out. But it's something along the lines of esplachthenistha. And the idea, it comes from a smaller word. I didn't put that one up there because it's not as fun. The idea behind this Greek word is almost that it hits you in the gut. You ever so upset by something, so taking pity on something, feel so much compassion for something that it just kind of almost turns your stomach a little bit? That's the level of what this Samaritan is feeling. He sees this man and it's not an option just to leave this man where he is. He is physically affected by what he sees in this man. And so he sees him, first of all. He went to him, bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii. We don't talk denarii a lot. Basically 2 days' wages. So whatever that is for you, if you think about giving up 2 days' wages for a stranger, for a Jewish stranger, and if you're a Samaritan, you guys don't get along. He doesn't like you. You don't like him. That's how it works. You're from different places. And taking this 2 days' wages, he gives it to the innkeeper and says, look after him. And when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. What did he do? He saw, he acted, and not only did he act, but he went way beyond what most would think. Even if he bandaged him up on the side of the road, he's better than he was. Even if he puts him on the donkey and takes him to the inn and then just leaves, he's better than he was. He leaves money, and he's going to come back and check on things. He does a lot. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? Now, this is why Jesus tells the story instead of just answering who. Because if you start at the beginning and say, who is your neighbor? A priest, a Levite, or a Samaritan? What's the answer going to be? Not the Samaritan. It's got to be the priest or the Levite. They're a little more like who I am. They're from where I'm from. And we can very easily get into this mode. Who is your neighbor? Not a Republican. Not a Democrat. Not a someone from there. Not one of those Ohio State. Not one of those Oregon State Beavers. Not one of them. How quickly we put people in these groups and assume that's where they're supposed to be. And Jesus said, nah, not always like that. The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. And Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Do this. Not enough to know, not enough to be convinced of it. Do it. So what does that mean for us? We were in Seattle a week and a half ago now. We were walking from the McDonald's across the street from the Space Needle because we know good food. We have children who wanted breakfast. We're walking from the McDonald's across the street from the Space Needle to the Space Needle to get on the monorail to go into town. About halfway across the street, I notice there's a homeless guy that's on the other side. And he is babbling loudly and incoherently. And I will admit to you, standing before you today, preaching about the Good Samaritan, my first thought was, do we need to take a wide path around and not make eye contact? Because I don't know if this guy is dangerous. He's talking really loud. I don't know what he's talking about. If something's about to happen, do I want to be in the middle of that? And so I'm kind of, you know, over on the right side of the crosswalk where he's kind of more toward the left side over there. And we cross and we get a little bit past and Nathan catches up with me. And Nathan said, I think we should go back to McDonald's and buy that guy a hamburger. I felt about that big. And I thought to myself, the reason we were at McDonald's in the first place is because we overslept the hotel breakfast. We went to McDonald's because we wanted to feed everybody. We had a free breakfast offered to us at the hotel that we'd slept too long for. And here's this guy on the side of the road. And I looked at Nathan, I looked at my wife, and I said, that's a good idea. We should do that. And so we walked back to the guy, and Nathan asked him what he liked, what kind of burgers he liked, and we went back over to McDonald's, and we got him a burger, and we got him fries and a Coke, and we brought it back across and gave it to him. And completely coherently, he said, thank you. And we said, God bless you. And I thought to myself, who's my neighbor? Guy by the Space Needle in Seattle? Not who I would have thought that morning. I thought quite a bit because we were staying kind of down near the Space Needle about the walk between the two places. Is this safe? Is it safe at different times of day? I've got a family to look out for, all that kind of stuff. Almost missed it. Almost missed it. Youngest child sees it. And for us, who is our neighbor? And I don't know what it will be for you this week, but there's a good chance you will encounter somebody that can use your help, your encouragement, maybe is in need of someone that's going to go above and beyond like the Samaritan does in this story. Whatever it is that you encounter, I hope those words of Jesus will echo in your head about who your neighbor is, whether it's the priest who knows everything, the Levite who probably knows quite a bit too, the Samaritan who you assume is supposed to be very much unlike you and not all that valuable. Because in God's eyes, we're all his creation. He loved every person on this earth enough to send his son and just wants that relationship with each of them. And for us, our job is to help that along as much as we can. So this morning, if you ask yourself the question, who is my neighbor? I think God will provide. I believe God will provide us with all the people we can help in different ways, and will challenge our thinking a lot on how that is supposed to work. If you find that church bus on the side of the road, help those folks out. Believe me, haven't been on the other side? It's important. And when you find yourself on the other side, understand that you're allowing the opportunity for God's people to help you out. And sometimes that's what needs to happen too. This morning, we would love for you to be a part of this family. And if you have not been baptized into Christ, we'd love to see that happen today and love to see you kind of trod through all of this with us and help remind us when we're off track and help encourage us when we're doing the right thing. This morning, if you look at your life and you think, you know, I know these things, I've learned them, I've got the facts down, but I'm not doing them. I imagine a lot of us could say that if we're being honest with ourselves. And so if there's something that we can help you with, whether it's praying about attitudes, whether it's praying about struggles you may be having, or whether it's seeing you baptized into Christ this morning, please come as we stand and sing.